Because of Jake's encounter with the engine, everyone was especially watchful the rest of that night. But nothing else happened, and the wagon train was ready to move on the next morning with a minimum of fuss. Jake seemed to be none the worse for wear after his experience the night before. And now that he had recovered from his fear, and the adults had stopped fighting over who he was going to stay with, he was back to being his usual, cheerful, inquisitive self. Preacher loped past him on horse, with Dog trotting alongside. Since the open sweep of the valley made everything in it visible, Preacher rode farther out in front of the wagons than he usually did, letting the stallion stretch his legs for a change. The wagons dropped back a mile behind him, and then a mile and a half, as Preacher approached the canyon at the far end of the valley. Preacher hadn't forgotten about that fleeting impression of movement he had seen in the canyon late in the afternoon of the previous day. After what had happened to Jake, Preacher had to wonder if what he had seen was that engine lurking around. As he drew closer now to the canyon, his eyes scanned the slopes carefully, searching for any sign of trouble. And as he searched, he rode closer.
I can hit him. I know I can. Wait, damn it! He's still too far away. And even if you did hit him, those wagons are still more than a mile back down the canyon. The shot would just warn them, and they'd stop before they're in the trap where we want them.
What's he doing? How come he ain't back with the wagons?
He's worried. His instincts tell him this is a good place for an ambush. I hope everyone has enough sense to stay down and keep hitting, damn it. The last thing we need is for someone to get over-eager and give the game away.
Preacher didn't see anything unusual about the canyon, so after a few minutes, he turned and rode back toward the wagons. Continuing feeling of uneasiness rose with him, though. When he reached the lead wagon, he held up a hand and a signal for Jerome to stop.
What is it? Something's wrong?
I got a bad feeling about that place up yonder. As slow as these wagons are, we'll be easy targets while we're going through it. There's plenty of hiding places on those slopes where somebody could be waiting to ambush us.
Indians, you mean?
I don't know. Could be Injuns or renegade whites or nobody at all. Could be I'm just imagining trouble where it ain't. But I've lived out here too long to just ignore what my gut's trying to tell me.
I don't want you to. What do you think we should do?
Well, there's not much we can do except keep going on. It'd take too long to turn around and go back. Anyway, this route has the best grass and water. But keep your eyes wide open. Be ready for trouble. Jake, first sign of it you see, I want you to hop back in there in the wagon bed and get your head down. And stay there until somebody tells you it's all right.
But I can fight, Preacher. It'd be better to give me a rifle and let me be ready to shoot if I need to.
Look, it ain't that I don't trust you. I do. But you're a kid, Jake. You don't need to be fighting and maybe killing.
What about you? You fought British soldiers in the Battle of New Orleans when you weren't much older than me. I'll bet you killed some of them, too.
How'd you know about that?
Blackie told me. He said that you were a mountain man by the time you were 15, and everybody out here knew that.
Yeah, well, that old boy talks a mite too much when he gets warmed up. You do what I told you, Jake.
Yeah, sure.
Preacher moved on down the line of wagons, warning all the other members of the party. He gave Deborah the same orders he had given Jake. In case of trouble, get in the back of the wagon and stay down. Unlike the youngster, she nodded in quick agreement, having already come through one battle unharmed that way. Then, having done all he could do to get ready for the potential danger, Preacher wheeled horse around and rode toward the far end of the valley once more. Because of the steepness of the high slopes, not much sunlight would penetrate between them until later in the day. The canyon lay dark and gloomy as it waited for Preacher and the wagons that followed him.
Let them get a little farther. I'll tell you when to fire. That will be the signal for everyone else, and this time, kill him.
That son of a bitch is dead.
Fairfax heard a scuff below him and turned toward the other boulders clustered behind him on the slope. Suddenly, Antelope, fleet as the wind, launched himself from the top of the rock behind the two white men.
What the hell?
Preacher wasn't sure what was going on up there, but the sounds were proof enough for him that the wagons had been rolling right into an ambush just as he feared. He whirled horse around.
Turn around! Get the hell out of here!
One of the riflemen concealed on the slope was careless and edged out from behind the boulder where he had been hit. Preacher saw Jerome Hart sag on the seat of the lead wagon, his right hand clutching at a suddenly bloody left arm. Jake scrambled back over the seat, grabbing the reins and starting to try to haul the oxen around.
Help! Help!
Preacher gave the boy credit for guts. He didn't think Jake was going to be able to make the team do what he wanted. Preacher heeled horse into a run. He saw Corliss struggling to get the second wagon turned around. There was no sign of Deborah, so Preacher assumed she was inside the wagon where she was supposed to be. On the third wagon, Gil Robinson bolted to his feet on the driver's box and doubled over with both hands pressed to his stomach. Gunshot, he toppled onto the back of the oxen and his team spooked. The oxen weren't moving much, but it was enough to trample Robinson's body into the dirt. That meant the third wagon wasn't going anywhere. Neither was the fourth, because Pete Carey clapped a hand to his thigh where a ball ripped a deep gash.
Leave the wagon! Get out of the can!
Preacher veered horse toward the lead wagon.
Jake, climb on!
Jake reached out to grasp Preacher's arm as the mountain man lifted him from the wagon seat and placed him on horse's back behind the saddle.
We can't abandon the wagons and all the goods!
It's that or get killed! Come on, damn it! Get down from there and run!
Jerome half climbed and half fell from the wagon seat, caught his balance and hurried toward the canyon mouth.
Come on, Corliss! Where's Deborah?
I'll get her!
Corliss waved Preacher, Jake, and Jerome on. Lars Nielsen had dropped to the ground from his wagon and run forward to give the wounded Pete Carey a hand. Blackie was on the ground, too, squinting through his lone eye over the barrel of his rifle as he drew a bead on one of the bushwhackers.
Got the son of a bitch!
Preacher didn't know how bad Blackie'd been hit, but he reached down and grabbed hold of Blackie as he passed, straining to lift the man and drape him across horse's back in front of the saddle. Horse lunged out from the narrow space between the steep slopes a moment later, carrying the triple burden. Preacher reined in and turned to see the others running after him. Nielsen helping carry, Jerome stumbling along, Corliss behind him.
Aw, shit! Where the hell is Deborah?
Skyler twisted around and saw Antelope fleet as the wind hurtling through the air toward him. As the engine collided with Skyler, the barrel of the rifle struck his arm and knocked the knife aside before he could bury the blade in Skyler's chest. The knife hit the rock instead, and the unexpected impact tore the weapon's grip out of the engine's hand. The Savage's other hand flashed toward Skyler's throat. The fingers hooked clothes around him and choked the life out of him. Wind flew backwards. Skyler looked up to see the smoking pistol in Fairfax's hand. That engine didn't stay down. He was up a second later, despite the wound in his side that welled blood. Skyler tried to draw a bead on the redskin varmint, but the warrior was too fast, bounding away among the rocks.
Let him go! We have more important things to worry about than one damn Indian. Kill Preacher before it's too late!
Skyler turned back to the business at hand. He saw that the drivers of the wagons were trying to turn around and escape the trap, but they weren't having much luck at it, despite Preacher's urging. Skyler brought the rifle to his shoulder and settled the sights on the mountain man as Preacher rode toward the lead wagon. Preacher veered his mount and reached out to grab the kid from the seat just as Skyler pressed the trigger. The shot was wide.
God damn it!
The party fled from the ambush, even though they had to abandon the wagons to do so.
If we go after them, we'll secure the wagons first. That's more important than whether or not the rest of those bastards get away.
We need to make sure Preacher's dead. I don't want that son of a bitch on my trail.
He's just one man, and he'll be saddled with wounded men. You must realize by now how outnumbered he is, too.
Jake, listen. When I get down, climb up here in the saddle and hang on to Blackie. Don't let him fall off.
Preacher swung down from the stallion's back and ran to meet the four men from the wagon train. Corliss was bringing up the rear.
Where's Miss Morgan? God damn it, Hart!
She was right behind me. My God, Deborah!
Preacher knew it instantly. Corliss had panicked and left Deborah behind in the wagon. With all the shooting going on, she had probably been too scared to follow him. That meant Preacher had to go back for her. But first, he wanted to get the others to a place of relative safety. A gully cut across the valley about 300 yards from the mouth of the canyon. That would give them some protection from the occasional pot shot that came winging their way from the slopes of the canyon.
Move! Get back yonder and stay down! Jake, can you ride?
A little!
Then hang on and get Blackie into that gully with the others!
Yes, sir!
Preacher turned back toward the canyon.
Come on, dog!
Preacher ran toward the wagons. The bushwhackers opened fire again. The creature launched into a low dive that took him behind a pine log to avoid being ripped. The dog hunkered beside. The creature twisted his head to look back toward the gully and saw Nielsen helping Pete carry down into it. They were the last ones still visible from Preacher's position. As soon as Carrie was clear, the Swede dived after him. The now riderless horse had trotted far off to one side, pretty much out of the line of fire for now. Preacher saw some of the bushwhackers as they emerged from their cover and started down toward the wagon.
Deborah! Oh my God! Deborah!
Stay down, blasters! Get yourself shot full of holes. Ain't gonna help anything.
The thieves started driving the wagons through the camp, while the bushwhackers kept the group pinned down until the wagons were gone, taking Deborah with them.
Burns, Loomis, take half a dozen men with you and circle around on horseback so you can come in behind Preacher and the rest of that bunch. The rest of us will go on with the wagons. You can catch up quickly enough when you've killed them all.
Can I go with them?
I want you to stay with me. Anyway, you haven't had any luck where Preacher's concerned. Maybe it'll be better if you just steer clear of him until he's dead.
The men quickly gagged Deborah and threw her in the back of one of the wagons. Fairfax and Schuyler tied their horses on behind the lead wagon and climbed to the driver's seat.
Take the reins. You men, make sure you kill that bastard Preacher.
Preacher had figured out what was going on. It didn't surprise him that the thieves didn't want to leave anyone alive behind them. If they knew who he was, they would know that if he survived, he would never rest until he'd tracked him down. As riders emerged from the trees and thundered toward the gully, Preacher settled his sights on the man in the lead.
Go get him, dog!
Dog leaped the gully and then leaped again, crashing into one of the attackers and knocking him off his horse. While that was going on, the men in the gully opened up too. The gunfire from the gully took a toll. Two more of the attackers went down, tumbling off their mounts. Lars Nielsen was thrown backward as two pistol balls smashed into him. He rolled to the bottom of the gully and lay motionless. The creature lifted his pistol. That left just one man on horseback. He wheeled his mount to flee. Jerome was one step ahead. Preacher heard more hoofbeats and ventured a look. Three or four men rode through the canyon and out the far end, galloping after the wagons.
Preacher! Preacher, are you all right?
Yeah, keep your heads down now. I ain't sure they're all gone.
After 15 minutes had gone by, Preacher felt certain they were. He stood up and trotted over to the gully to see how bad things were there. Someone had rolled Nielsen onto his back so that the Swede's eyes stared sightlessly up at the morning sky. After everything that had happened, it was difficult to believe that it wasn't even mid-morning yet. Preacher was sorry to see that Nielsen was dead, but relieved when he saw Blackie sitting up with his back propped against the side of the gully, while Carrie tied some makeshift bandage ripped from his shirt around his torso.
Oh, how bad is it, Blackie?
I reckon I'll live. That shot dug a chunk of meat out of my side, but Carrie's taking care of it.
Blackie and me ain't gonna be too much use in a fight for a while.
Well, that's all right. You two can sort of take care of each other and Jake while the rest of us go after those damn thieves.
They took Deborah.
We have to rescue her.
If you hadn't left her there for those bastards to capture...
I swear, I thought she was right behind me.
You panicked. You abandoned her.
That's a damned lie.
Both of you shut the hell up. We ain't got time for...
Preacher?
Preacher saw that Jake was staring toward the canyon. He turned his head to see what the youngster was looking at, and was almost as surprised as Jake seemed to be at the sight of a bloody, buckskin-clad figure limping and staggering toward him.
It's an Injun.
Yeah, it sure is. That's the Arapaho chief we met a while back. Antelope Fleet is the wind.
As the Injun hobbled closer, Preacher could tell that Antelope Fleet is the wind was badly hurt. Antelope stumbled and almost fell. Preacher leaped forward to grab his arm and steady him.
Preacher, be careful. I ain't sure, but I think that's the Injun who grabbed me last night.
I don't reckon he means us any harm. Otherwise, he wouldn't have come walking up to us out in the open like this.
Preacher and his friends are Antelope's friends. Preacher's enemies are Antelope's enemies.
You're the one who jumped them as they were about to ambush us.
They killed the warriors in my hunting party. all but myself and... Eagle Flies High, who rode for help while... I followed them. There must be vengeance.
So you tracked those sons of bitches while your pard Eagle went to fetch the rest of your warriors?
Yes. But when I saw them about to attack you, I knew I could not let them do that. Could not let them kill Preacher and his friends. You treated my people fairly.
Well, how bad are you hurt?
I hate to intrude, Preacher, but those men are getting farther away with each minute that goes by.
You ought to know by now that those wagons don't move very fast. When we're ready to catch up, we will.
On foot?
Preacher gestured toward the horses that had been ridden by the men who had circled to attack him from behind.
We'll catch some of those mounts when we're ready to go. But first, we need to patch up Antelope here. Then bury Robinson and Nielsen, I reckon.
You're going to give that savage medical attention?
That savage is on our side. We'll have a better chance of getting Miss Morgan back and settling the score with those bastards if he's along with us.
What about those other men? Are we going to bury them too?
Well, with this gully handy to toss them in, I don't figure to waste time and sweat on varmints who were trying to kill me just a little while ago.
Preacher got busy tending to Antelope's wounds. The ball had passed through his side at an angle, exiting from his back. Preacher went into the trees to scout up some moss, which he used to pack the hole. Then he bound it up with strips of cloth torn from Nielsen's shirt, since the Swede didn't need it anymore. Antelope's chances weren't very good, actually, but Preacher did all he could for the Injun. And Antelope did seem to be a little stronger, at least for the time being. When the men who had been left behind to take care of Preacher and the others caught up to the stolen wagon train, there were a lot fewer of them than Schuyler and Fairfax expected.
What the hell happened?
Preacher and them others put up more of a fight than they ought to have been able to. They killed Loomis and Burns and the boys who went with them.
So Preacher's still alive?
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
Damn you! You had good cover in the canyon. Why didn't you stay there and make sure they were dead before you left?
We was running low on powder and shot. And anyway, Preacher and the others were hunkered down where we couldn't get any good shot at them. Besides, we figured you needed to know what happened to Burns and Loomis and the others.
You mean you were afraid of Preacher once the odds were closer to even? Well, the damage is done. Were any of Preacher's companions killed in the fighting at least?
Hard to say for sure, but it looked like one of them was hit pretty bad. He's probably dead.
There can't be more than half a dozen of them left, Colin. Not even Preacher would be foolish enough to come after us with such a small group. Would he?
I don't know, but if he does, we'll wipe him out for sure. God damn it, how does that bastard keep escaping?
Because that bastard's Preacher!
The horses were skittish, so it took Preacher a while to catch six of them. Once he did, though, there was a mount for each of the six men, plus one for Jake, since Preacher was riding his own stallion. Jerome had rigged a sling for his wounded arm, which was stiff and sore, but didn't hamper him too much in mounting and riding. He wouldn't be able to handle a rifle, though. Before they set out, Preacher gathered all the pistols, powder horns, and shot pouches from the dead men. He left the extra rifles behind because they would be too cumbersome to carry. The group is well armed now and had plenty of ammunition, but they were still heavily outnumbered. Because of the wounded men, they couldn't go too fast, but even so, Preacher knew they were moving at a quicker pace than the wagons would be able to. They rode through the canyon where the ambush had taken place.
What do you know about those men?
Antelope gave a curt shake of his head.
Nothing, except that they are white and evil. There are two men who lead them. This I learned as I followed them, after they killed my warriors. One chief is tall, the other short. They are not men of the mountains and plains. They have spent much time in cities. This I can tell.
Tall and short, huh? The tall one wouldn't happen to wear buckskins, would he? Short one's got a suit and a beaver hat.
How do you know these things, Preacher?
You mean it really was them?
Two men are, as you say. Are they known to you?
If they're who I think they are, I don't know their names, but I know they're sorry sons of bitches. Evil men, just as you say. Antelope, I ain't sure what they're doing out here so far from where they came from, but I reckon fate takes some odd turns sometimes.
The ways of the man above are mysterious to those who live in this world. We can only accept them
They emerged from the canyon and followed the wagon ruts along a twisted path that wove in and out of the heavily wooded foothills. It was rare to be able to see more than a couple of hundred yards up the trail before it took another sharp bend. That torturous route had its advantages, though. The thieves wouldn't be able to see Preacher and his companions following. Around midday, they found a spot next to a creek where the wagons had stopped for a while to give the teams a rest. The droppings heaped on the ground told Preacher that much. He found something else on the ground, the bundle of bows and arrows that Pete Carey had placed in the back of one of the wagons after the battle with the Pawnee.
Why'd they throw those out?
Didn't figure they had any use for them, I reckon. But we sure as hell do.
Why on earth do we need such primitive weapons? We have guns and plenty of powder and shot.
You'll see when the time comes.
They allowed their mounts to rest for a short time, then pushed on. Antelope's face was gray now. The Preacher worried that the Arapaho might pass out and topple off his horse. But Antelope hung on with grim determination, as if nothing was going to sway him from his mission of vengeance. The Preacher understood the feeling. He felt the same way himself. Before long, Preacher called another halt. He got one of the bows and a handful of arrows and carried them over to Jake.
Jake, I've been meaning to show you how to use one of these things. Now's as good a time as any, I reckon.
Really? You want me to shoot this arrow?
Yeah. See if you can hit that tree over there.
Awkwardly, Jake fitted the arrow to the bow string, then raised the bow and pulled back on the string.
Ow!
A child of my people with two winters could do better.
You're holding it wrong, Jake. Here, let me show you.
Preacher worked with Jake for about a quarter of an hour. By the end of that time, the boy could hit the tree trunk with most of the arrows he shot. After disparaging the weapon first, Corliss began to show a surprise and interest in it.
Let me try.
Preacher gave Corliss another of the bows and several arrows. Corliss was strong enough that he had no trouble drawing the bowstring taut. When he fired, the arrow flew fairly true and glanced off the tree trunk.
Not bad. Try again.
Corliss picked it up quickly, hitting the tree with several arrows. The flint heads penetrated deeply enough into the wood that Preacher had to use some effort as he wrenched them loose.
Huh. You got the makings of an Injun.
Hardly. But I do seem to have a natural talent for archery.
You think you could put an arrow through a man?
If he was one of those bastards who took Deborah, I believe I certainly could.
You may just get your chance.
Deborah wouldn't be a prisoner if it wasn't for you, Corliss.
You're right, Jerome.
I am?
Yes. I really did think that Deborah was following me, but I should have made sure. I never should have left the wagon without knowing that she was with me. It's completely my fault, and if anything happens to her, I'll never forgive myself.
Where did that come from? I've never known you to appear noble.
There's nothing noble about it. I've just had some time to think today while we were riding, and I've decided that it's time for me to grow up. Jerome, you've always been the sensible one. I've been slothful and concerned only with myself.
Yes, well, that's true.
I know it is. That's why I'm going to change. If we can save Deborah, you'll see, Jerome. I'll do what's best, even if it means giving her up and letting her be with you.
She doesn't want to be with me. She wants you, Corliss. That's really all she's ever wanted, don't you see? Her brief flirtation with me came about only because she thought you didn't care about her as deeply as she cares about you.
I know. I've got a lot of fences to mend. I just hope I have the chance to mend them.
Do those two always talk like a flowing river about nothing?
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
Preacher knew that traveling by horseback, they could have caught up to the wagons before the day was over. He didn't want to do that, however, so he kept the group moving at a deliberate pace that ate up the ground yet didn't bring them too close to their quarry. Whatever they did, it would be better to wait until after night had fallen to make their move. Darkness settled quickly over the rugged landscape once the sun dipped behind the peaks to the west. Even though it was midsummer, the elevation was high enough for a cool breeze to spring up. It blew from the west, down from the mountains. That was good, because it would carry their scent away from the thieves' horses. As they reined in at the edge of some trees that ran along the top of a rise, Preacher caught a faint tang of wood smoke on the air, carried by the breeze from a camp not too far ahead.
Blackie, you and Pete and Jake will stay here.
Hell no. Pete's too crippled up to do any fighting, but I ain't. I can still squeeze a trigger, damn it.
So can I. I want in on whatever you're planning, Preacher.
With that wounded leg, you'd have to do your fighting from horseback, Pete, and the sound of hooves would give us away. Anyway, I don't intend to fight any pitched battle tonight. I just want to spook those bastards and cut down the odds of might while I'm doing it. You stay here too, Jerome. Corliss and Antelope and I are the only ones going.
You know what you're doing, Preacher.
Let's hope so. Corliss, get one of them bows and about a half dozen arrows.
I can shoot a bow. Pretty good, too. You said so yourself, Preacher. Let me come along.
Not this time, Yunker. You may get your chance later, though.
A few minutes later, Preacher, Corliss, and Antelope were ready to leave. The stars had come out overhead, but the moon wasn't up yet, so the night was still quite dark. Preacher led the way as the three men advanced on foot. The wind had died down some, but a whiff of wood smoke drifted to Preacher's nose from time to time, enough so that he knew he was going in the right direction. They climbed a hill, moving as silently as possible. Being quiet might be a matter of life and death before the night was over. When they reached the top of the slope, they crawled over and looked down into a hollow where the wagons had been drawn into a circle. A campfire was blazing in the center of that circle. Men moved around it, coming between the flames and the three stalkers on the hill. Preacher tried to count them and estimated their number to be around 25. His eyes narrowed as he spotted the two men Antelope had described as the leaders of the gang. Even though he couldn't be sure, he felt like there was a good chance they were the same men who had tried to kill him back in St. Louis and murdered Abby instead. How they had come to be out here, stealing the cousin's wagons, Preacher had no idea. What he did know was that he was close enough to kill him with his rifle right now. That wasn't what he had set out to do tonight, so he pushed that tempting thought aside. Instead, he let his keen eyes search the darkness for the sentries that the thieves were bound to have posted. It took him a while, but he finally located three men spread out around the camp, well out of the circle of light cast by the fire. Silently, he pointed them out to Corliss and Antelope, and then they waited as time dragged by. And one by one, the men down below turned in for the night, crawling into their blankets that were scattered around the camp. Only when everyone except the guards appeared to be asleep did Preacher reach over and tap Corliss and Antelope on the shoulder. The Arapaho didn't need to be told what to do. He crawled off toward one of the guards. Preacher motioned for Corliss to take the nearest man. Then he headed off to his left to dispose of the guard in that direction. When he was close enough, Preacher stopped, came up on one knee, and knocked one of the arrows he had brought with him to the bow. Preacher hoped that Corliss and Antelope had disposed of the other two guards, but he didn't wait to find out. He crawled forward, straight into the camp of the enemy. Preacher's left hand clamped down hard over the sleeping man's nose and mouth. The fire had died down to a faint red glow, so Preacher was able to crawl from sleeping man to sleeping man without much risk of being discovered, unless someone just happened to wake up at the wrong moment. But Preacher knew his luck was going to run out sooner or later.
Over there!
Preacher reached the spot where he had left Corliss and Antelope. Both men were there waiting for him.
Let's go.
Preacher led the way down the far side of the slope.
Will they come after us? They're bound to come after us.
Not tonight they won't. They'll be too spooked. They'll build up the fire and sit around all night too nervous to go back to sleep, wondering when death is going to come for them.
It had to be Preacher. By God, it had to be that bastard.
What are we going to do now?
We're going to find him and kill him. That's what we're going to do. We'll leave the wagons here with a few men to guard him while the rest of us hunt him down.
No.
What did you say?
That's just what he wants us to do. While we're gone, he'll slip in here and take the wagons back along with the girl. You'd see that, Colin, if you weren't so mad that you ain't thinking straight right now.
Damn it, Schuyler, I'm the one who does the thinking around here.
Yeah, but that don't always mean you're right. And now you ain't.
Now, maybe you're right. Preacher knows we outnumber his group, even after he slipped in here and killed half a dozen of us. It'd be to his advantage to split us up somehow.
That's what I'm talking about.
All right. Come morning, we'll push on towards South Pass. We'll be more alert than ever, and we won't let Preacher pull a trick like this again. But if we haven't dealt with him by the time we get where we're going,
then we'll hunt him down and kill him.
Antelope fleet as the wind was breathing hard by the time he and Preacher and Corliss Hart reached the hill where they had left the others. Corliss put a hand on the Arapaho's arm.
Let me help you.
I need no help from a white man.
Preacher took hold of Antelope's other arm.
I'm white, and you lost a lot of blood the past couple of days.
Preacher's skin may be white, but his heart is that of a true human being. I will let you help me.
Suit yourself. I just figured now that we've fought side by side against the same enemies.
Antelope hesitated, then put out a hand. Corliss grasped it and moved up on his other side. Between him and Preacher, they supported the Arapaho chief on their climb up the hill.
What do we do now?
Keep an eye on the wagon train. If those varmints come after us like I'm hoping, then we can get around them and grab the wagons back before they know what's going on. If they're smart enough not to fall for that, then we'll keep harassing them until they don't have any choice but to come after us. Otherwise, we'll whittle them down to nothing.
Either way, we have to kill the rest of them.
Yeah, either way, we kill the rest of them.
Antelope was badly winded by the time they reached the crest. The moon had risen by now, and Preacher saw Jake and Jerome step out of the trees to greet him.
Thank God you're back. Is everyone all right?
As all right as we were when we left, except for Antelope being a mite wore out. He needs some rest.
Preacher, something happened. There's Injuns. A whole bunch of Injuns.
Preacher didn't need Jake to tell him that. He had already spotted the shadowy figures drifting out of the cover of the trees, arrows knocked to their bowstrings, ready to kill.
I see him, Jake. Fact is, there's no reason to panic now. If those warriors are hostile, it's too late for any of us to do anything except die.
By morning, the members of Shad Beaumont's gang who were still alive had settled down considerably, since nothing else had happened during the night, and it was easier not to be scared when the sun was up. They buried the men Preacher had killed. Nobody entertained the slightest doubt that Preacher was responsible for their deaths, although it was possible he might have had help. Then they prepared to get the wagons rolling again. The woman refused to eat when Skylar tried to give her some breakfast. He knew her name was Deborah Morgan. She had admitted that much before falling stubbornly silent.
Miss Morgan, you gotta eat. You'll die if you don't. What can I do to talk you into eating?
Let me go.
I don't reckon I can do that. My partner wouldn't like it.
You mean that bald little man who gives all the orders?
Yeah.
Then tell me what you're planning to do with me.
Nothing bad is gonna happen to you. We're gonna take you back to St. Louis and let our boss decide what to do with you.
And just who is this boss of yours?
I can't say.
Oh, go away and leave me alone. I wouldn't believe anything you told me anyway.
After a few more minutes, Skylar gave up. When he left the wagon where Deborah was being held prisoner, he ran into Fairfax.
Get her to eat?
Hell no.
She'll cooperate when she gets hungry enough. She'll do anything we say when she realizes she's not gonna get away.
She probably thinks Preacher's gonna come save her.
Well, we won't let that happen now, will we?
The wagon train got underway again. It was a beautiful, crisp, high country morning. Skylar could tell, though, that they would soon be working their way down out of the foothills and back onto the flats before the next range of hills and mountains rose. That was the one where South Pass was located, according to the map he'd seen. That was where they were headed. The trail took a downward slant before Skylar was expecting it. The wagons rolled around a hill and then started down a gentle slope, at the bottom of which the terrain flattened out into a broad, grassy plain. Also at the bottom of that slope was a line of buckskin-clad, feather-decorated, painted figures mounted on nimble ponies. There were at least 40 of the warriors. They made no move to attack. They simply sat there, blocking the path of the wagon.
Oh, hell, Colin.
Take it easy, maybe they're not hostile.
Not hostile?
Look at him.
Yeah, maybe we can bargain with him.
One of the warriors suddenly edged his pony forward a couple of steps. He sat stiffly, and if Schuyler and Fairfax had been close enough, they would have seen how gray and strained his face was underneath the streaks of war paint. Antelope, fleet as the wind, had endured a great deal to reach this moment alive. The burning deep inside him told him that he didn't have much more time remaining. But he was going to take savage pleasure in what happened next.
That, see? That must be their chief. Who wants to negotiate?
The Injun carried a rifle. He thrust it into the air over his head. Preacher burst out of the trees on horse. Dog raced along after him. Corliss and Jerome Hart, Pete Carey, and Blackie all followed as well. They were to one side of the wagons, launching a flank attack. Closer than the Arapaho warriors led by Antelope Fleet as the wind, they would reach the wagons first. With the attention of the thieves focused on the attack and engines, Preacher and his companions were within yards of the wagons before anybody even noticed them.
Oh, shit, it's Preacher!
Preacher swept past the now riderless horse. Behind him, the others opened fire, too. Preacher veered his stallion toward the lead wagon, figuring that was the most likely place for Deborah to be. He had already spotted the two men he most wanted to meet again on the driver's seat of the wagon. The tall one stood up and raised a rifle to his shoulder.
Ah, you bastard!
Preacher felt a stunning jolt as the ball struck his left arm, causing him to slew halfway around in the saddle, and he almost fell off the lunging stallion. He caught himself, though, and guiding the horse with his knees, he brought up the pistol in his other hand.
I hit him! I actually hit him that time!
Mims was dead before his body hit the ground. The man in the beaver hat leaped to the ground and disappeared in the chaos that was spreading around the wagons. Choking, blinding clouds of dust and powder smoke filled the air. Preacher let the other man go and brought horse up next to the wagon.
Miss Morgan! Deborah! You in there?
The canvas flap shot back.
Preacher!
Corliss flashed past Preacher and reached out to grab Deborah, lifting her from the wagon and cradling her in front of him.
I've got you. I've got you, and I'll never let you go again.
One of the renegades on horseback suddenly loomed up behind him, a shotgun clutched in his hands. He swung the weapon's twin barrels toward him. Corliss looked at the dead man, then looked around at Jerome, who sat his horse nearby with a smoking pistol in his hand. After a second, Corliss smiled and gave his cousin a nod. Jerome returned it.
Look out!
One of the thieves had run up behind Jerome and swung an empty rifle at him like a club. The blow missed because of Corliss's warning. With one arm still firmly wrapped around Deborah, Corliss drove his horse forward and lashed out with a pistol in his other hand. By now, Antelope Fleet as the wind and the rest of the Arapaho war party had reached the wagon. And although the renegades put up a fight, they were no match for the warriors swarming around them. It was a massacre. Preacher and his party rode away to leave the engine to their bloody work. It was all over in a matter of moments. Preacher made sure that none of his companions had suffered any new injuries, then rode back to the wagons. He found Antelope Fleet as the wind sitting propped up against the wagon wheel. The chief's wounds had broken open again, soaking his buckskins with blood. But he smiled and lifted a hand in greeting as Preacher dismounted.
Preacher, it was a good fight. But I wish there had been more of the enemy to kill, since this will be my last fight.
We couldn't have won without you and your men. You saved us all.
Preacher is a good man. You know, what is important and what is not. Do not let those who come after us ruin this land.
I'll do what I can, Wind.
Preacher nodded a final goodbye and then rode back to his party. Preacher waved for Corliss, Jerome, and the others to come on in. They still had a long way to go before they reached South Pass.
This is it. This is the place for our trading post.
It was a week later, and Jerome nodded as they stood looking over a broad, grassy park at the foot of the slope that led up to South Pass. The meadow had a creek for water, plenty of grass for livestock, and trees for logs with which they would build a large, sturdy trading post. An uneasy truce between the cousins had grown into acceptance and the beginnings of friendship again. There had been no more talk about splitting up. For one thing, since the deaths of Robinson and Nielsen, they were short-handed. It was going to take everybody to make a success of this enterprise, including Jake, who had agreed to stay with the cousins, at least until the next spring.
But the next time you come by here, Preacher, you have to take me with you. I'll be most grown by then.
Uh-huh. Well, we'll see.
The rest of the journey had passed without incident. Preacher and Jake had both been forced to handle one of the teams, a job that Preacher didn't like. He'd managed all right, but if he never saw another ox's rear end, that would be just fine with him. Jerome, Blackie, and Pete Carey were all healing from their injuries. Blackie and Carey were going to stay on and help build the trading post. Then Carey planned to continue working there while Blackie went back to trapping. Now everyone was gathered around to say goodbye to Preacher. Deborah hugged him. And after a second's hesitation, so did Jake.
Thanks for bringing me along, Preacher. Even with all the fighting, I like it a whole heap better out here than I did in St. Louis.
Yeah, I feel the same way, son.
Someone's coming.
They all turned to see a rider headed toward them, leading a pack horse. After a moment, though, Preacher recognized the man, who wore a coonskin cap with tail dangling in front of his shoulder.
Don't worry. It's a fellow I know named Bouchard. He's another trapper.
Bouchard reined in and raised a hand in greeting.
Sacre bleu, Preacher. What is this? The beginnings of a new town?
Well, you never know. These folks are setting up a trading post.
Oui. I think I heard something about that. And a good thing it is, too, because there is a wagon train full of settlers about 3 days behind me. They will be needing supplies, I would guess.
3 days? We can't build a trading post in 3 days.
So we'll sell to them out of the wagons. You wouldn't happen to know if there's a minister with that wagon train, would you, Monsieur Bouchard?
Oh, in fact, I believe there is.
Good. I think we're going to need to have a wedding.
Deborah smiled. Corliss glanced at Jerome.
That is, if there's a best man available.
There is.
Let's get to work, everyone. There's a lot to do before those wagons get here.
They were all so busy, they didn't even notice when Preacher and Bouchard rode away.
It is unusual to see you with greenhorns such as those, Preacher. You guided them out here, we?
Yeah. I seem to keep getting roped into this sort of thing.
Any trouble along the way?
No, not too much.
Preacher went on to tell the tale of the journey to Bouchard.
Something still bothers me, though. I checked all the corpses of the men that attacked the wagon train and kidnapped Deborah. That man in the beaver hat wasn't amongst them. Figure either he got wounded and crawled off somewhere else to die, or else he slipped away during all the confusion of the battle. Either way, he's got to be a dead man, because I can't see where there's any chance of somebody like that surviving out here on his own so far from civilization. If a grizzly didn't get him, a wolf would. And somehow he escaped from them, weather or engines to take care of him. Still, I'd like to know for certain sure that that bastard was dead.
Well, cannot have everything.
No, I guess not. But a fellow who lives out here on the frontier, he's coming mighty damn close to it.
A month later, Shad Beaumont stared in amazement at the gaunt, filthy scarecrow of a man who had been brought into his study in his big house on the outskirts of St. Louis. The beaver hat was long gone, and the clothes were in tatters. Beaumont recognized the man despite that, but just barely. Colin Fairfax had changed a great deal. He looked like a man who had been to hell and back.
What happened?
Preacher happened. Killed poor Schuyler and ruined everything. Nearly killed me. But he didn't. I made it back.
The animals didn't get me, and neither did the Indians. And you know what kept me going?
Beaumont could only shake his head at this crazed mockery of a man.
Preacher kept me going. I knew I had to live so that someday, somehow, I can kill that goddamn preacher.
The First Mountain Man 14, Preacher Showdown, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2008, William W. Johnstone. Production copyright 2009, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Mort Shelby, Terrence Aselford, Richard Rowan, Dylan Lynch, Ken Jackson, David Coyne, Eric Mesner, Bobby Aselford, Andy Clements, Michael Glenn, Kate Torrey, James Lewis, Christopher Graybill, Scott McCormick, Karen Carbone, and M.B. Van Dorn. Additional Boot Hill Boys by the Dead Giveaways. Directed by Bob Supan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Johann Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Johann Detweiler. Musical score composed and performed by Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed Preacher Showdown, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. And be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's Blood Bond, The Last Gunfighter, and Eagles series. Available from Graphic Audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles as well as free downloads and podcasts. Now, keep listening for exciting previews of other graphic audio titles. We appreciate it.
The following previews are of graphic audio productions rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Available now from Graphic Audio. In a remote corner of untamed Northern California, a man who is Frank Morgan's exact lookalike has been terrorizing the local population.
You got a problem with me, mister?
I knew it. You're gonna kill me, ain't you, Val?
Who the hell is Val?
You is.
My name is Frank, not Val.
Says you. I know who you is. Val Dooley is wanted, dead or alive, and you is a spitting image of Val.
If this Dooley person is so famous, how come I never heard of him?
He ain't been outlawing long, but in a few months he's been rampaging and a-raping and a-killing and a-stealing to beat the band. And that ain't all he's been doing.
Well, what else has he been doing?
Lifting the dress tails of a lot of good women. He's a mighty handsome man. Women get all flighty and stupid around you. Him. You sure you ain't Val Dooley?
I'm sure.
I guess you ain't. But if you want some good advice, you'll get back on your horse and head east. Get the hell out of this part of California, because if you stick around here, you're going to be a sure enough dead man.
And when the townspeople get their hands on Frank, a hangman's rope is sure to follow.
Steady now, Wolf.
You got your nerve, Val.
Somebody shoot that murderer.
Get him. Don't let him get away.
You scum. We got you now.
Go, Wolf. Go. What the hell's the matter with you people?
Somebody get a rope.
Yeah. Hang that murdering bastard.
If Frank is going to be taken for an outlaw, then the last gunfighter is going to act like one.
Don't kill me, Morgan!
Oh, I'm not gonna kill you. We're gonna have a nice long talk, you and me.
Huh?
Oh, what are we going to talk about?
You're going to tell me everything about Val Dooley.
What are you doing with that fire, Morgan? What the hell are you going to do with that, Morgan?
I told you, Danny, we're going to have a long talk.
You ain't going to burn me, Morgan. You're a lawman. You can't do nothing like that. It ain't legal.
Neither is kidnapping and rape, Danny.
I don't know nothing, Morgan. I swear to you, I don't.
You're a liar, Danny. You better talk to me, and you better start right now.
I won't. I won't. Ah!
The Last Gunfighter, number 6, Imposter. Coming soon from Graphic Audio.
Justice League of America, The Flash, stop motion. All the victims experienced massive head trauma, and their brains appear to have been exploded from the inside out by something that can either exist in multiple locations at once or is moving at super speed.
It's fast.
What is this thing you're dealing with that shaves off a man's skull?
I don't think it's human. He's done it, hasn't he?
I was using human DNA. I expected a human result.
It is harvesting. It is following its first imperative.
You guessed right, Wally. All the victims tested positive for the metagene. All of them were potential superheroes.
It will keep looking and killing until it finds the donor who provided the DNA that was its root stock.
In fact, it's faster than me.
Copyright 2008, DC Comics. Justice League of America, The Flash, and all related names, characters, and elements are trademarks of DC Comics. 2008, DC Comics. All rights reserved.
If you can't find that hot graphic audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.